This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Sunday Showcase, highlighting some of the best audio storytelling found anywhere. All right here on the Mutual Audio Network.
The following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance recommended.
Welcome back to Mutual Presents on our good ship Viola's Reach. I'm Captain Jack Ward with my shipmate Penny the Cat. You may not know this, but Jack Sparrow from Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean wasn't just a real historical figure. His name was actually Jack Ward. This week, as we make our way across the eastern shore of Nova Scotia, we return to the seas with my favorite nautical adventure from the Mutual Broadcasting System, The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen. This week, it's the 15th Llama and the Wise Guy from the East, and Hattie McCormick and the Patient Stowaway. So wind back those clocks!
Entry, the Ketch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position, 3 degrees, 44 minutes south, 158 degrees, 13 minutes west. Wind fresh, sky fair. Remarks, departed Christmas Island after interruption of holiday plans. Reason for interruption, the 15th Llama and the Wise Guy from the East. The name Christmas was given to the island by its discoverer, Captain James Cook, who dropped the first civilized anchor off its west shore on Christmas Eve, 1777, celebrated the holiday, and left on the second day of the new year. We raised the outline of its palm groves just 2 days short of 170 years later and slipped into its sheltered lagoon to see what we could do to set the scene for our own celebration. There wasn't much we could arrange for a stateside rotogravure-style Christmas scene, but with memories and the ache of homesickness to be fought by activity, the crewmen worked a change on the deck of the Scarlet Queen. An awning went up over number two hold. Reef was spliced out of lengths of spare hawser.
Hey, what do you think of this now, Captain?
The Christmas tree materialized out of the shaft of an oar, to which were lashed branches from pandanus pine. By sunset, it was draped with light lines, some dipped in red paint, some in white. We were buried so deeply in the new Yuletide atmosphere that it was only by chance that my chief mate Gallagher lifted his head to see the stranger standing in through the reef paddock.
Hey, skipper, look at the liner bearing down on us.
It wasn't quite a liner, but almost. It was a trim, luxurious power yacht, the Lurie, with a fortune in bright work shining in the setting sun. It nosed into anchorage a few yards off our starboard beam, and a man in a white linen suit stepped to the boat deck rail. We'd almost forgotten Christmas until we heard the cry of a baby in one of his cabins, and then the hail.
Ahoy, gentlemen! I trust you have brought the three emissaries from the Orient.
So Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
Gregory Osgood, CMGNCB, the British usage companion of the bus.
Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
This is my chief officer, Mr. Gallagher.
I'm glad to know you.
My honor, sir. And you, Captain?
Carney.
Well met, gentlemen. Indeed, a pleasant surprise to find you and your company here.
Thanks. Come on in the cabin. I'd like to offer you some hospitality,
Major. Indeed, yes, I accept, Captain.
That hail of yours about the three emissaries from the Orient threw us a little out of trim.
I should be surprised, sir, if it had not startled you. Well, let us say it was a mere phrase, gentlemen, in the spirit of the season.
And that was a baby we heard, wasn't it?
Yes, it so happens that I do have a child aboard.
Oh. Sit down, Major. Red?
Yeah, I'll get it.
He's a splendid, lusty little chap, Captain. Of Catanese extraction, little more than a month in this world. A pathetic case, sir.
Mm-hmm.
According to the wish of the mother, I am transporting them to their homeland. Thank you. Season's greeting to your boat.
And to you, Major.
Yes. Now, more pleasant subjects, gentlemen. If I might beg another portion of that tasty spirit.
Yeah, sure, help yourself.
A friendly cup, gentlemen, from time immemorial. The cement of comradeship and the dispeller of loneliness.
He cemented comradeship and dispelled loneliness right down to the bottom of the bottle before dark. And left after insisting that Gallagher and I have dinner with him aboard his yacht. We put our dinghy over the side at about 6:30. Stoked it across the few yards of water between the ships and climbed the polished accommodation ladder to the equally polished decks of the Lurie.
Come in, gentlemen. Here, into the salon.
You're in fine voice, Major.
Yeah, we ought to have you for our song, Pat.
It is a dismal croak, gentlemen, but could you hear the feeling behind it? Here, this door.
The first thing I noticed as we went in was the Chinese girl standing beside a box-like crib. She was quite beautiful, her coloring delicate, her face less moon-shaped than the usual. Her whole physical attitude, the way she held herself, somehow a little non-oriental. She looked at us as though waiting, half fearfully, for us to start something.
This gentleman is the mother, Xin Yang Xing, but the introduction must remain silent since the poor girl speaks no English.
Well, that don't seem to be stopping the sprout here.
Yeah, he sounds like he's got the makings of a good chief mate.
Merry little chap, is he not? Come, come, little fellow. Smile for your new friend.
Look at that, Skipper, with my finger.
He can hang on.
Sure, he thinks it's a hatchet. I tell you, he's going to be a seaman.
Hey, oh, no, you don't. You aren't taking a bite off of that finger.
Well, indeed, sir, there's no cause for fear. Now then, gentlemen, I've seen two refreshments with which to whet your appetite. And then we shall see what beggarly fare will be set before us by my pantrymen.
The Chinese girl was still standing there as we left. We didn't see her for the rest of the night. The cocktails were refreshing, the dinner was not beggarly, and the magazines we browsed through afterwards were recent. A little after 10, Red and I shoved off and rode back to the Queen. The sky was bright with moonlight and star-filled. The phosphorescence swirled off the blades of the oars.
He's quite a host, Skipper.
Yeah.
Works out quite a spread.
Yeah.
Now, what's the matter? You sound like you got indigestion from it.
I was just thinking it over, Red. I wonder why the hearty Major is lying to us.
Lying? Why should he?
That's what I say. I don't know.
Well, what makes you think he is?
Magazine I ran across, Red. On child care. In English.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess it's their party. Come on, let's hit the sack. Next day brought more visitors to our lagoon. First, it was a trim, gaff-rigged schooner that stood in through the passage and dropped anchor just astern of the Lurie. A few hours later, a lugger put her hook down off our stern. I hadn't realized that Christmas Island was so popular. But we had affairs of our own to keep our minds on. Just after sunset, Nielsen came into the cabin to bring me the latest development.
Could I have a word with you, Captain?
Yeah, how are things going, Nielsen?
Yeah, but pretty good. We're even getting some presents under the Christmas tree. And more of them were showing up every few minutes.
A little early, aren't they? I thought they decided tomorrow would be the day for the presents.
Well, that's what I come to talk to you about, Captain. With all the work they did getting things rigged up and with those presents burning holes in their sea bags, they don't want to wait no longer. They get carried away and they want to have the party tonight.
They got carried away, Nielsen? How about you?
Who, me? Well, yeah, I think it would be better tonight. I think, by golly, I'd put my prisoners under the tree first.
You tell the men they can do anything they want to.
Yeah, and you and the chief will be there,
A typhoon couldn't keep us away. Here, Nelson, keys to the liquor stores, and don't be shy or you'll be spending the night running back after more.
Thank you, Captain. I won't be shy tonight.
Oh, Nelson, keep the men out of sight for about 15 minutes, will you? Mr. Gallagher and I got some packages to get out there under that tree.
Aye, aye, sir. By golly, this'll be a good one.
We were in the cabin with 10 minutes to go before we met the crew at the tree. We changed to fresh jumpers and dungarees. Red was humming happily and even making a stab at shining his sea boots. I didn't hear it until Red stopped humming.
Skipper?
Yeah, I hear it.
What the devil?
Let's quit kidding ourselves, Red. He's aboard. He's on deck. Come on.
There was no place else to go.
It was the Chinese girl, wet clothes clinging to her, her dripping child squirming angrily in her arms.
Will you please help us?
How'd you get here? To swim?
There was no other way. I had to get Len away from them. Could you find something dry to wrap him in?
Come on into the cabin. Take the kid, Red.
Me?
Yeah, yeah, take him. Get that wet stuff off of him. Wrap a blanket or something around
him. He's only angry and frightened. He'll stop crying when he's dry.
I'm telling you, Skipper, this one does it. I'm finding a new bird.
Here's a towel for you.
Thank you. Captain, I didn't know where to turn. And after seeing the way you acted with my son on Major Osgood's ship, I knew he was lying when he told me you were trying to take Len away from
him. Wait a minute. Yeah, that sounds a little phony to me, too.
He told me to pretend that I didn't speak English so that you wouldn't try to talk to me.
Why shouldn't we talk to you?
Because he didn't want you to know the truth. I didn't know the truth until those two ships arrived today. Two Tibetan officials came on them, and after the major told them about my son, I heard them bidding for him. And now I know that either one would kill him to keep the other one from getting him.
You need a drink.
No, I don't. You've got to believe me. My son was lotus-born.
Lotus-born? How's that work?
He has a small birthmark on his back that is shaped exactly like a lotus blossom with seven petals.
Red?
Yeah, it's here all right, Skipper. Right between his shoulder blades.
Okay, what's the rest of it?
It makes of him a very special baby. Major Osgood told me that Lin must go to Tibet to take the place of the 14th Sugar Lama, who died during the same hour in which my son was born. If it were ordained, I was willing to give up my son. But I didn't know that he'd be bargained over as a political pawn by two power-crazy officials.
Where was your son born?
In San Francisco. Major Osgood's brother was the doctor who delivered him. Then while the major kept us in hiding, he sent a man named Grimes to Tibet. It all sounded like the grand dreams that every mother has for her son. But now it's nothing. They'll kill him. I know they will.
No, I don't think they will. I don't think they'll lay a finger on your son as long as he's on this ship.
But they'll be here after him. If you knew what it meant to them... Either one would have the power to rule the Buddhist world if he could take Lin with him. They'll do anything to get him.
Now, look, there's a cabin right through that passageway. Small, but it's private. Now, here's some clothes about eight sizes too big for you, but they're dry. You'll feel better when you get into them. Now, go on. We'll take care of the kid.
All right, Captain Carney.
Yeah. Well, how do you like this?
Well, it's great. Well, we can't toss little Charlie here to the wolves, can we?
No. Not till he gets some hair on his chest, anyway. And now look at him. The thankless little brat. He gets us into this mess, and now he goes to sleep.
Red, I'll match you to see who goes forward to tell the crew. We'll have to call out.
No, I'm not matching, no.
Captain. Hold it, Red.
Captain Carney, sir.
Didn't take him long, did it? Go tell the story to the crew, Red. Bring two men back here wearing two automatics apiece, carrying rifles.
Captain Carney, we're coming aboard.
Now, the kid's asleep. Hide him a little better with that blanket before you go. I'll go out and match lies with the major. Yeah.
Good evening, Captain. I beg forgiveness for this rather brazen boarding of your vessel,
sir. I'll put that in my log, Major. What do you want?
First, I would like to present to you my associate, Mr. William Grimes.
Happy to meet you, Captain.
How are you, Grimes?
Captain, events have a mere fraction of an hour ago taken a distressing turn.
Yeah, what happened?
My charge of that comrade, Chinese girl, and her infant son have disappeared, sir. Lock, stock, and barrel.
Huh? Why'd you come here?
Well, just on a chance first, Captain, but maybe we were right. You got the marks of wet feet on your deck here.
By George, you have, sir. Leading directly to your cabin.
Yeah, I just took a dip.
Indeed, sir. Then have you heard or laid eyes upon this, upon my disappearing passenger?
In the first place, I haven't had time to look or listen. In the second place, I don't care.
Well, now, there's a strangely familiar sound. Uh-huh. Captain, I suggest that we retire to your cabin where we may discuss this like gentlemen. Well, sir?
Well, I don't see why not. Come on. But you could forget any ideas you might have about taking the kid off this ship. He decided he didn't want to be a llama.
You are aware of the startling truth. Then, sir, surely you jest when you intimate that he will be denied the honor, glory, and homage which are his just due.
Oh, what are you handing me?
Why, the find of the century, sir. It is destiny. Destiny that is rushing him headlong toward his rightful position as the 15th Sugai Llama. Who, sir? Who, I ask, would dare to stand in the way of destiny? Who, sir?
I would, and take it easy with that desk.
There. You made him hysterical with your sacrilegious statement, Captain. Mr. Grimes, quiet the child.
Stay away from him, Grimes. Listen, Mady, you sold his mother this bilge up to a point.
Yes, indeed, sir.
You've evidently sold your emissaries from the Orient on it. Maybe you've even sold yourself, but I don't buy so easily. And the mother lost interest when your two politicians started fighting over the kid like he was a pork barrel bill being shoved through Congress.
That, I must say, is an odd reaction, since she herself would be ennobled and held in the reverence you are queen.
Not so odd when it looked like the bargaining would end with the kid being knocked off by one of your boys so the other one couldn't have him.
Yes, you are the pessimistic one, Captain. I will admit that the emissaries coming from rival prelates did become somewhat feverish in their bargaining.
While we're on the subject of that bargaining, who was the highest bidder going to pay? Who was going to collect?
Why, it may surprise you to learn that I was.
No, it doesn't. Why else would you bring two men from rival prelates to your little auction? The kid's staying on this ship and you're leaving.
Not so fast, Connie.
You are, of course, assuming that you have the right to interfere in a matter which is most definitely none of your affair.
Yeah, since the boy was born in the States and this is an American ship. Been enough, Major?
Yes, you are a stickler, Captain. Yes, it's not. I ask one small favor, Captain. More in desperation than in the hope of any show of generosity from you. It may indeed save my life as well as that of Mr. Grimes.
What is it?
I beg of you, sir, allow me to bring to this cabin my two erstwhile clients so that they may at least view the infant. If they do not see him, sir, their anger will no doubt reach extremes fatal to me as well as to my associate, Mr. Grimes.
All right, Major, I'll give it a try.
Thank you.
But I'm going to have some armed crewmen in here.
Needless precaution, Captain. I assure you that our arrival will be in the spirit of the evening, sir. That of peace on earth and goodwill toward men.
By the time he got back with them, we had the cabin ready for the audience. We had the child bedded down in my bunk with his mother sitting beside him, and two crewmen heavy with weapons standing on each side of the cabin. The two Tibetans were draped in long robes and wore the black skullcaps of their station. The first was thin, with an angular face and snapping black eyes.
I would like to present Yafel Langdun, the emissary from Sugai, Captain Carney.
It is with honor that I greet you, Captain.
Welcome aboard.
This, then, is the child.
The second was older, heavier, with a set face that looked as though it had forgotten how to smile.
I would like to present Rahima Kashgar, the emissary from Shigatse, Captain Carney.
I greet you from the heart, Captain.
Welcome aboard.
I would see the child without further waste of time.
The two robed figures bent silently over the sleeping boy, moved him with gentle hands, lifted the blanket so that they could see the lotus mark on his back. They stood, still silent, for almost a minute, then turned toward me.
We would be honored to take the child now and make our decision as to which of us he will...
Wait a minute. I thought you knew. Nobody's taking the child.
What words are those? The boy belongs
Major,
to us?
But these men understood. I thought you told them, no
tell them? Gad, Captain, what could I tell them, save that you, sir, stand defiantly before them in the very act of kidnapping the child?
What words are those?
The Major took with his hands our payment. We will take the child by force if
he
we must.
He goes with us to Tibet.
We have fulfilled our bargain to you,
I
Major.
I, too, have fulfilled my obligations. I have brought you to the child. From now on, gentlemen, your negotiations are with the captain.
There aren't going to be any negotiations. I'm going to see that this kid and his mother get back to San Francisco.
You will not be successful, Captain. We are well armed. We will not permit you to go until we have the child.
We got more threats of armed boarding parties from the Tibetans as we helped them over the side. I pulled the crew the rest of the way out of their party mood, armed them. In the faint light of the westing moon, we watched the Oriental crews join forces on the lugger. All in all, it was a great Christmas Eve. And the poor little guy who was causing it all slept peacefully through it on my bunk.
Shoot. Well, what do we do? Just sit here?
We can't sail out. They'll swarm all over us if we start to move.
What a holiday.
Listen, Red. If we can hold out until the moon drops behind the palms and we get some shadow out here, I'm going to try something anyway.
Yeah, what?
I think the way to spring this trap is through the major. But I gotta have something to bargain with. Red, if we can get our heaviest hawser around his anchor cable and secure it ashore, I think I'll have it. You think it can be done?
Listen, I changed to baby tonight. After that, anything's a breeze.
Forty minutes later, it was dark enough for us to go to work. With only a few yards between us and the lorry, I was able to make the hole swim underwater. But I found something better than the anchor cable to use. Groping down the curve of the lorry's steel bow for depth, my hand hit a metal ring welded to the hull to be used for bracing in dry dock. I slipped my line through it, headed back toward the Queen. Fifteen minutes later, Red had the other end of the hawser secured, and the lorry was moored neatly to shore. I went into the cabin for dry clothes, jotted a radio message down on a blank, and rode over to the lorry. Grimes met me at the top of the ladder with a Thompson sub held ready at his hip and ushered me into the salon.
Well, sir, a visit that I must confess is quite unexpected.
Oh, it's the Christmas spirit, Major. Give and receive.
I don't follow you, sir.
You will. It's simple. I have you to thank for being bottled up. Now you have me to thank for the same thing. With me, it's the Tibetans. With you, it's a stout hawser from your ship's bottom to a palm tree ashore.
Mr. Grimes, if you please, hand me your weapon. Go at once astern and test the captain's integrity.
Don't take your eyes off him, Major.
Never fear, I shan't. You're an extraordinary fellow, Captain, to go to such lengths.
Oh, here's a radio message I sent earlier tonight to the island officials on Fanning, 100 or so miles north. You accused me of kidnapping the youngster, so I've accused you of the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Christmas Island, Major Gregory Osgood and Accomplice Grimes, kidnapping two United National Subterranean Craven, urgent request under arrest. Why, actually, Captain, this is no more than a sheet of foolscap. Am I to take your word that you made this,
No, you don't have to take my word. Why don't you wait for the patrol boat? It'll be in tomorrow.
Beastly situation.
Yeah. What do you suggest, Major?
Does it feel to you that the ship's making sternway, Captain?
I know it isn't.
Yes, sir. Perhaps you have a suggestion as to how we might extricate ourselves from this deadlock. Have you now?
Yeah. Give and receive. You call your Tibetans off the boy and me, and I'll call the arresting officers off of you.
Discouraging thought, sir, since I would be forced to return to them the payment already received.
You couldn't spend it in prison anyway.
Now, that was unnecessarily cruel rejoinder, sir. Assuming that my actions were, as per your suggestion, how then would you proceed?
Well, it's simple. Radio them that the first message was based upon faulty information. Tell them to ignore it. What would your story be?
I presume that I would be forced to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That actually the boy is by no means metaphysically fitted to become the Sugai Lama.
I figured as much.
Yes, he was born at least 4 days before the Lama's death. Someone tampered with his birth record. Well, sir. Oh, Mr. Grimes.
Oh, we're caught fast, all right, Major. Now, I must be fastened to a dry dock hook. It's too deep to reach.
You've seen only one small portion of our dilemma, Mr. Grimes. Go fetch the chest we so recently received from the emissaries. For our very freedom, we are forced to return them.
What? You mean you're going to give them back?
Yes, in the ancient spirit of Christmas, to give is to receive. If you please, Mr. Grimes, it would be wise of you never to forget that.
He stopped at the Queen on his way back from his visit with the Tibetans, a sadly deflated major. His clothes torn, his face bruised, his hands raised pathetically. We told him we'd cast off the hawser and that the lorry was free to sneak away in the darkness. He climbed back to his small boat.
Goodbye, gentlemen, and sad paradox. I feel driven to wish a Merry Christmas to you all.
Same to you, Major.
And many of them.
Captain, could I have a word with you?
Yeah, sure, Nelson. What is it?
Well, Captain, it's 2 a.m., but the men have been waiting, and they wondered if it would be
you
all right.
You mean they want to have that party now, Nelson?
Yeah, that's right, Captain. They were awful disappointed.
Well, turn them loose, Nelson. We missed Christmas Eve, but we got 22 hours of Christmas Day ahead of us.
Yeah, sir, there's nothing like an early start.
Well, we got that, no mistake. Let's see what we can make of it.
Hey! Hit the deck! Come every last one to study it! We got a celebration to take care of! And come out singing a carol, or you'll be home stoned in the deck for the rest of the night! Come on, boys! Let's go!
What it proved, I guess, was that time is relative, and that Christmas is Christmas, even on Christmas Island. The lorry and the other ships moved out, and the men were like kids again. Packages were ripped open, gifts compared. The cook's spread, slightly stale from the long wait, was wolfed down. The bottles moved. The lagoon began to echo to the same carols that St. Mark's choir was singing. Ours weren't good, but they were loud.
Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel. When the foreman came in sight, gathering men.
All but one of our number enjoyed them, and he was a loud minority. I wondered if he'd ever realize what this particular Christmas meant to him. But when I looked at his mother cradling him in her arms, I knew he would. The joy that shone from her face was different from ours. I couldn't help but think that her feelings must have been pretty much like those of the other mother. The way she held her tiny son and looked not at us, not at our jewelry Christmas tree, not at the island or the sky, but beyond, into a clear but unknown future. Looking at her, I felt for just a moment that I really understood the holiday we were celebrating.
For 24 hours after the party, during which a cutter arrived from Fanning Island to pick up Sheen Yang Sing and her son and get them headed back toward the States. By 3 that afternoon, we nosed out through the reef and into the southeast trade.
Stand by! Commit fire!
The men moved to their station slowly, looking out over the stern at the island and remembering a laugh or a song and the meaning of good comradeship.
With port speed!
The block snapped taut. The reeves groaned under the halyards. The big mainsail bellied out in the breeze. The jib shot up. The mizzen swung into work. And the Scarlet Queen seemed to shake herself a little before she got balanced between wind and water, dropped her port rail, and settled down into her course. Then her rigging sang and her deck started to glisten with the spray she kicked into the wind that swept across her.
That's a nice little breeze, Skipper. Are we getting all of it?
Yeah, I don't think we're missing a whiff.
You know, I've been feeling kind of ashamed, Skipper.
About what, Red?
About that Christmas party. All was great and we all knocked ourselves out and got a lot of presents, but we didn't do one thing for our queen here.
Oh, Red.
No, no, not even a new pennant. Not one piece of new line.
Oh, no.
No, I'll bet you didn't even give her a thought.
Oh, blazes, I didn't. That's why I don't feel guilty like you do.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, think it over.
Well,
all the things that happened aboard her. She was Christmas. A whole works. How are you going to top that?
Would a wassail do?
Right. A Christmas toast.
Here, Skipper. To the Queen?
To the Scarlet Queen. After you, mate. After you.
Log entry. The catch, Scarlet Queen. 5:30 p.m. Wind fresh. Sky fair. Sea calm with long cross swell. Carrying full sail. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Log entry, the catch, Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position, 14 degrees, 20 minutes south, 170 degrees, 40 minutes west. Sky fair, wind brisk. Remarks, departed Pango Pango, island of Tutuila, after involvement in murder. Reason for involvement, Hattie McCormick and the patient stowaway. It was a fair trip and a fast one down across the line from Christmas Island until we raised the atolls of the Northern Cooks. We touched there at Penryn, where we took on a cargo of fresh fruit for the American naval base at Pango Pango. The wind deserted us after we cleared the harbor, and the Scarlet Queen rolled sluggishly through glassy water. Her masts and rigging carried all the canvas we could send aloft, but it hung there, barely disturbed by the faint, humid breeze. The slow progress got to the crew, too. With the oppressive heat, it pulled at their nerves, shortened their tempers. Even the gulls circling overhead were bellyaching. I was sweating out my trick at the wheel. We were a day off the eastern tip of Tutuila when the monotony aboard the Scarlet Queen suddenly came to an end.
Hey, skipper! Look at the passenger I dug out of the forepeak!
My chief mate Gallagher was walking aft toward me, pushing in front of him a burly, dark-haired man whose face was covered with a three-day stubble of blue-black beard, whose eyes looked out sullenly from beneath heavy brows.
He sneaked down at Penryn, he says. I found him in the rope locker when I went in after some lines.
Who are you?
George Craven.
You came aboard at Penryn?
That's right.
There's such a thing as working your passage instead of stealing it.
I had to be sure.
Yeah, sure that nobody saw you leave. Where you bound?
Same place you are, Pango Pango. That's why I picked your ship.
Who are you getting away from?
Nobody. I'm going to start the new year right. There are three people in Pango Pango I'm going to kill.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week, a complete entry in the log, and every week, a league further in The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
Take the wheel, Red.
Okay, Skipper, got it.
Go on into the cabin, Craven.
Sure.
That way. All right, through here. Sit down.
I don't know what you're going to start in on, but you can save your breath, Captain. Nobody's going to keep me from getting in a dame and a flunky.
Who?
I don't mind telling you. She's a big fat chiseler named Hattie McCormick. She runs a joint in Pango Pango called the McCormick House. You or nobody else is going to stop
me. Sure, that's all fine. But look, you're a stowaway. This is an American ship going into an American port. I want to stay out of trouble. To do that, I turn you over to the naval officials when we dock.
That's all right. I expected it.
I'm going to get this into my log. When'd you come aboard at Penryn?
Your last day there.
Boarded December.
Wouldn't have found me if that wind hadn't dropped and that blasted heat hadn't driven me out of that hole for some air.
Yeah, yeah. Where are you from? I said, where are you from?
Just put down a log. I don't feel like answering no more questions, Captain.
You like to make it tough for yourself, don't you? You don't make friends very fast.
I ain't had much practice. I'll talk to the Navy.
All right, Craven. We'll be in tomorrow. In the meantime, you'll stay on the after deck during the day where we can see you. And you'll spend tonight under guard and locked in the cabin through that passageway.
You don't have to worry. It's taken me 11 years to get this close. I'd be nuts to waste them by causing you any trouble now.
By noon the next day, we'd made Pango Pango Harbor. Craven was a model prisoner as far as he went with us, but it wasn't far enough. When I got to his cabin, it wasn't empty. But instead of Craven, the man inside was my crewman who'd been on guard.
Nielsen! Nielsen!
He'd been slugged and he was bound and gagged. I didn't know where Craven had gotten the tools or the education, but the lock on the door had been neatly jimmied.
Outside of the lump on Nielsen's head, the only thing he'd left for us to remember him by was his murder threat. And now he was ashore and free to carry it out. Twenty minutes after I'd put Gallagher in charge of the Queen, I'd located the McCormick house. It was a typical island building, two-story frame with a corrugated tin roof. Most of the ground floor was taken up by the bar room. The usual group of island customers were pretending to enjoy what was coming out of the ancient player piano in the corner. The florid face of the bartender smiled with a half-hearted welcome as I walked up to him.
Happy New Year, mate.
How are you?
Well, what do you have?
Nothing right now. I'm looking for Hattie McCormick. Is she here?
Oh, you'll never find her anyplace else. Did you bring something for her?
Yeah. Some bad news.
Oh? What is it? I'm Lester Nord. We are partners here, so anything for her is for me, too.
Well, maybe you'd be interested then. Do you know George Craven?
What about him?
He's here in town.
Hey, you're crazy.
He stowed away on my ship from Penrand and the Northern Cooks. We found him yesterday. I had him locked in a cabin, but he jimmied his way out after we got into the harbor. He must have slipped over the side.
What did this fellow look like?
A big guy. Black hair, bushy eyebrows.
Hattie! Come out front, quick! She'll be out.
A door at the back of the room opened, and Hattie McCormick took up the full width of the opening as she came through it. She might have been the Sadie Thompson type when she was younger. There were some traces of past attractiveness shining through the weight the years had loaded her with. But it was easy to see that Hattie hadn't given up the fight. Her plump hands and fat wrists were crusted with costume jewelry. Her hair was just off platinum. Her face was brilliant with makeup. Her eyelashes were beaded like a burlesque queen's, but they barely did justice to the sparkle behind them.
Well, who is this, Lester? You called me from Chapter 3 of a mad love story, so I do hope he's something special.
He says Craven's here in town.
George Craven?
Huh?
Impossible.
He described him all right. He says he stowed away on his ship to get here.
Oh, well, if he said so, that's enough for me.
Yes.
Honey, did anyone ever tell you that most women would believe anything that came from that appealing face you wear?
Well, your approach is a little startling, Hattie, if you know what I mean.
Honesty and impulsiveness. I've used them all my life since leaving the mountains of Nebraska. What's your name, honey?
Phil Carney.
That's nice. Oh, let's go back to my room, shall we? I want to hear more about this and get away from the din of that infernal piano.
Maybe I better close up.
I can't say. Lester, of course you won't. To help me, I don't know why I bother with you. You get more like an old woman every day. Oh, come on, honey. We'll have a couple of shots back in the room.
Hattie, you old rascal, you sound as though you read that line before.
Plenty, honey. It's my favorite. The bottle's in the cabinet, honey. Bring it over, will you? I'll just sit down.
All right, Annie.
Oh, George Craven. Now he's back, huh? Man, man. Oh, if one day one would pass without a man causing me trouble,
I... You look like you've thrived on it so far, Hattie.
Yes, I guess I have. Bless them all. Oh, I've loved a lot of men in my 35 years. Oh, but tell me, honey, what did George Craven have to say?
You won't like it.
Huh?
He said he was on his way here to kill three people.
Idiot. He made that statement to you?
Yeah, and it sounded like you were number one.
But it doesn't have to ruin our drink. Here, let's get this down.
All right.
Do you work for money, Phil?
That sounds like the build-up to an offer.
You're right, honey. I need help. Oh, I'm not exactly afraid of George Craven, but I'm not as fast on my pins as I used to be. I'd like to hire you to be my bodyguard.
That could be quite a chore, honey.
Well.
Tell me, why is Craven gunning for you?
Oh, he used to be married to my niece. He's no good, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
I took her away from him with Lester's help. Craven tried to get her back with a gun. We had him sent up for 10 years on an assault charge. Now he's out of stir and out to pay us back for the rap, I suppose.
Why don't you go to the Navy, honey? They'll give you a protection.
Oh, no, not the Navy. I'm in enough hot water with them and the missionaries as it is.
They'll send me back to the States if anything else happens. I need somebody like you around, Phil.
Well, I don't know, Hattie. I'd like to help you out, but I got ship work to do. We got a cargo to load.
What?
Hattie, Lester just told me to Craven's. Who's this?
Phil, this is my niece, Viola.
Huh?
Dearie, this is Captain Carney, the man who brought Craven to us.
Oh. What are we going to do, Hattie? He'll kill me.
No.
He'll kill me, Captain.
Well, that's no news to me, but I didn't invite him to Pango Pango. He stowed away.
Phil, it's worth $200 if you'll just stand by us. We really need your help.
Yeah.
Now, look at this poor child. She's terrified. Lester's gone all to pieces. You're the only one we have. And after all, Captain, he came on your ship.
All right, Hattie.
You let him escape.
Hattie.
Now, the least you
Hattie,
can do
all
is...
right. We're going to lay over for a few days until we get a cargo. I'll do what I can for you.
Oh, Phil, honey, that's my boy. I knew I didn't make a mistake in that honest Irish face. Pour us another drink, huh?
It didn't take much selling to get Lester to close the McCormick house to customers. By nightfall, we had every door and window in the place locked. And after Hattie had herded the others to their rooms and she'd gone to hers, I slipped outside to stand my watch. I found a spot just outside the door from which I could cover the approach from town. There was a faintly perfumed breeze floating through the grove of nipa palms that surrounded the place. And the half moon shot rays of light down between the trunks. I'd been there maybe 15 minutes when I heard the door behind me crack open and the niece Viola slipped out. She was wrapped in something sheer that matched the moonlight. Her eyes were wide with fright and her fingers picked nervously at her mouth. Viola!
Oh, Phil, I wanted to find you.
What are you doing wandering around?
I couldn't stand it in there any longer. Can I stay with you for a little while?
Yeah, sure, I guess so. Sit down.
Thanks, Phil. Do you think you'll come, Phil?
You know him better than I do, don't you?
I know him better than anybody does.
Well, you think he'll come?
I know he will. If he comes to me first, I think I'd go back to him if that's what he wanted.
Maybe you should have thought of that 11 years ago. You can build up a pretty good hate during a 10-year stretch.
I know you can, Phil. I don't think I would have done to him alone, but I was just a kid. Hattie and Lester. Oh, I don't know,
yeah,
Phil.
Yeah, yeah. Well, relax, Viola.
Phil, have you seen anything? With all these shadows, you might have slipped past.
Nobody slipped past. You're all right.
Yes, I guess I am. Now that you're here, Phil.
Yeah, look. I was thinking maybe instead of sitting here watching you get the jitters, I ought to go find him and turn him over to the authorities.
Phil, he hasn't done anything
yet. He stowed away on my ship. Slugged my crewman.
Don't leave. Oh, Phil, I do feel better with you here. Like this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave. Phil, did you see that?
Where?
Over there on the other side of the house.
I didn't see him.
Oh, I'm sure, Phil. Oh, God, I'm so frightened.
Yeah, I think it's your imagination, but if it'll make you feel any better, I'll take a look.
Don't leave me here alone. Wait for me, Phil.
We found nothing in the shadows.
Better see if the house is all right. Phil, I'm so frightened.
We walked slowly around the house. I checked the windows. Everything was secure on three sides. But on the fourth, we stopped.
Phil!
The job wasn't as neat as the one on my cabin door, but it was just as effective. The window was raised, and I looked in on a ground floor hallway. I ran my fingers across the bottom of the window and felt the torn grooves where a bar had been pushed in and forced upward to break the lock. Hattie's room was at the end of the hall, and I headed for that first. Hattie! The first sound of life was the creak of bedsprings under her weight. Then the lights went on.
Phil, what in heaven's name is the matter?
Somebody forced a window at the end of the hall. Where's Lester?
Upstairs in his room, I think. Wait till I put on some slippers and get something around me. I'll go up with you.
I'll meet you up there.
Phil, don't leave me alone. Is that maniac in the house?
By the time I got to Lester's room, I figured I'd done her a favor by leaving her behind. The door was closed but unlocked. And he lay with his feet toward it, sprawled on his face. It looked to me like the weapon that had caved in the back of his head was the same bar that had been used on the window. It lay on the floor beside him. I didn't even bother to check his pulse. I just left him.
Is he all right, Phil?
Phil.
I'm not doing much of a job for you, Hattie. He's dead.
Oh, no, Phil. Oh. He was a good man, Phil. Lester was a real good man.
I'm sorry, Hattie. Will you be all right?
We was together for a long time. Sure, honey. I'll be all right.
I think I saw Craven. He was running away.
What?
What are you
going
to do?
I'm going after him. I think it's about time, don't you?
Oh, gee, honey, don't do that.
Why not?
I'd rather you stay here. I hired you as a bodyguard, and I need you. Look, Viola's hysterical. And now with poor Lester. Oh, I need you more than ever. Don't go, Phil.
You got a gun, haven't you?
Yes,
well,
but...
get it in your hand and keep it there.
Phil, you don't even know where he is.
He can't be far. Rest easy, Hattie. I'll be back.
Not easy, honey. But I'll do the best I can.
By the time I got outside, there was nobody in sight. The first place I checked was the small waterfront hotel. Not only was George Craven registered under his own name, the desk clerk told me he was in. I didn't bother to knock when I got to his door. All right, Craven, just stay in that chair.
Connie, who's chasing you?
Stow it and settle down. You and I are going to have a talk about a murder.
Oh, we are? What murder should we start
with? I told you, stow it. You're the guy who started all this murder talk, remember?
Yeah, I think I do. But you're wasting your time, Connie. I got more alibis than teeth. I got one for everything you can think of.
There's a way to take care of alibis and the teeth along with them. Come on, Craven. Spill.
Get out of here, Connie. I don't know what you're talking about. Are you going?
Look, Craven. I'm being paid money to get the story you're going to tell me. And we're leaving together.
I ain't being muscled tonight.
Come on, Craven. Make it easy for yourself. You aren't going anywhere this way.
Keep away, Connie. Keep away from me now.
All right, Craven. I got plenty of time if you have.
What's the matter with you, Connie?
I watched him get up. I didn't realize what was bringing him to his feet. When I did, it was too late. He was crouched in front of me, but when I heard a movement behind me, I spun. All I had time for was a glimpse of Viola Saxon's face and the piece of pipe she was swinging. It landed across the side of my head and erased everything. The first thing that found its way through the pounding in my head was a question. Why Viola Saxon? I got to my feet, still working on the question. But when the room settled into focus, I knew she'd never answer it. Viola Saxon was still there. She was lying next to a toppled chair. She'd been killed by the same piece of pipe she'd used on me. I started digging for some new answers. In a woman's purse, I found one. A bank book on a New Zealand bank. $140,000 balance in the name of the McCormick Company. In an envelope I found in a dresser drawer, there was another. Craven's prison release form. I shoved both answers into a pocket, covered Viola's body with a blanket, and left. It somehow didn't surprise me that Craven was sitting at a table in the hotel bar instead of hiding out somewhere. I didn't bother trying to talk to him this time. I sent a note in to him. Then I went back to report to Hattie McCormick.
Phil, honey. Oh, I've been worried about you. Where have you been?
Beating my head against the biggest stone wall on the island. I'm resigning.
Phil, honey, what's the trouble? Tell Hattie.
Well, I gotta tell you, I guess. Viola's in Craven's room at the hotel.
Viola's in...
She's dead.
Dead? Oh, no. Oh, I told her when she met that man that something dreadful would happen. I did everything I could. I told her to be careful. You know, Phil, we had to have him arrested once.
Yeah, I know, for assault. But here's his prison release form. It says grand larceny.
Oh, it's a forgery. I know him. He wouldn't stop at anything.
You know what I think, honey? I think you wouldn't stop at anything.
Phil.
I think you and Lester and Viola were mixed up in it. Well, that you framed him into taking the rap. I think that's what he came to Pango Pango to pay you off for.
Phil, honey, what in the world makes you say that?
A bank book.
A bank book?
With a $200,000 deposit in the name of the McCormick Company the year Craven went up. And enough balance to make murder worthwhile.
Where did you see it, Phil? That bank book.
Viola took it to him.
By that little cheat. Excuse me, honey. I'll have a look.
You could see her blanch even beneath the layers of powder when the bank book was mentioned. She waddled toward a roll-top desk in the corner. When her back was turned, I scooped up the .38 revolver she'd left on the table. I broke it, emptied the shells into my pocket, snapped it closed again, put it back on the table before she moved toward me.
It's gone. It's gone. I've got to have that bank book.
I think that bank book's caused about enough trouble.
That maniac. It's dangerous letting him run around loose. Phil, you've got to go to the officials immediately and have him arrested.
You mean it?
You've got to help me, Phil. It may mean my life.
Oh, how right you are, Hattie. All right, I'll go. But here's the story I'm going to have to tell him. To begin with, Craven didn't kill Lester Nord.
Phil, what are you talking about?
Lester was killed from behind by somebody he must have trusted. I don't think he would have turned his back on Craven. You want more, Hattie?
Good heavens, Phil. Then Viola must have done it.
You know, honey, I think you're half right. But Viola must have lost confidence in you, Hattie. After you two knocked off Lester, she followed me to Craven's room and laid a pipe across my head to keep me from turning him in.
Why, Phil, honey, that's the most...
All right, Craven, come on in.
You're double-crossing me, Phil. You're double-crossing me. But you won't get away with it.
Her move for the gun on the table was the fastest one I'd seen her make. She held it at her generous waist and backed into the middle of the room as Craven came in.
Hello, Hattie. You haven't changed a bit. Last time I saw you, you were holding a gun on me. I was your patsy for that little haul that you masterminded. Things have changed, haven't they, Hattie?
Don't come any closer. Either one of you.
You had a good idea about the murders, Hattie. A man with a revenge motive who even made a threat.
You were always too greedy, Hattie. You should have been happy with Lester gone and just a two-way split. You wouldn't have had to follow little Vi up to my room and kill her.
Georgie... There can still be a two-way split. You and me.
Oh, no, Hattie. I tried it. When I left her in the room, I told her the same thing I'm going to tell you. I waited 11 years for this payoff. Money won't do it. You've taken care of the other two for me. Now I want you.
That sounds like about it, Hattie.
I'm only sorry for you, Phil.
Thanks. I had a soft spot in my heart for you, too. All right, this has gone far enough. I'll take the gun,
no,
Hattie.
No, Phil, don't try it. You'll go with Craven if you do. I warned you. Phil! You did this to me. You did it.
Doc Craven! Okay, Hattie, it's all over. Hattie!
It's all right, Connie. She just passed out.
Yeah. Well, the authorities will get one of them anyway.
Okay, there you are, Connie. I've waited 11 years. There's the last of the payoff. They're all taken care of.
What are you bragging about? You didn't kill anybody. That's what you came here for, wasn't it?
I came here because I knew those three were sitting on a keg of dynamite from that frame they slipped on me. I knew just showing my face would blow it.
Yeah? Well, you just stay here and gloat over it for a while. I'll go round up a naval shore patrol. We didn't wait to say goodbye to Hattie McCormick when they loaded her aboard a ship for the States. We picked up a cargo of copra bound for the market in New Guinea. And the day before her departure, we cleared Pango Pango Harbor and stood out into a sea ruffled by the southeast trade.
To make sail!
We were passing a sleek destroyer when Gallagher bawled his orders. And the crewmen, driven by the pride that's found in those who ship under sail instead of steam, snapped to their stations in front of the audience gathered on the destroyer's deck.
Report, chief! Make sail!
The mainsail climbed smoothly into place under the pull of eager arms. The jib went up, then the mizzen. And the Scarlet Queen, as though she too felt superior to the steel machine off her starboard, took the push of the wind gracefully, bowed her tall mast before it, and seemed to dance through the white caps that speckled the water ahead.
We gave that destroyer crew quite a show, didn't we, Skipper?
Never mind the show, Gallagher. What I want to know is, have you checked the ship for stowaways?
Oh, Skipper, I'm the guy that found him, remember? I didn't let him aboard.
But there ought to be a New Year's resolution in this, Red.
You mean maybe we can work out something like a rat guard to keep stowaways off?
No, it goes deeper than that.
Oh, you mean start teaching the kids in kindergarten that if you want to go to sea, you either ought to pay for it or work for it?
No, you got the wrong slant, Red. Teach them that if they got an urge for grand larceny, to stow away before they do it instead of afterwards.
Well, the guy didn't do so bad at that, Skipper. $140,000 bank account.
Which he may have to give back.
Yeah, well, in a thriving business in Pango Pango.
And with the memories he's got, he can have it.
So what's the New Year's resolution, Skipper?
Well, slipped my mind, Red. Oh, but what's the difference? What happened to the resolutions you made last year?
Oh, I wish you hadn't brought that up, Skipper. I made a terrible mistake. I swore off this kind of life. Yeah. I was going to settle down in a good, solid, respectable job in
Nebraska?
Well, like you say, what happens to resolutions? Here, Skipper, to the Queen?
To the Scarlet Queen. After you, mate. After you.
Log entry, the catch, Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Wind, fresh to moderate. Sea, cresting. Mainsail and mizzen reefed. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
Mutual invites you to sail into further adventure on the voyage of the Scarlet Queen next week at the same time. The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen stars Elliot Lewis as Phil Kearney with Ed Max as Gallagher. And tonight featured Verna Felton as Hattie, Jack Crucian played Craven, and Lillian Bayef was Viola. Music scored and conducted by Richard Orant. The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
And that's this week's Mutual Presents feature. The Mutual Audio Network brings the best of old-time radio and modern audio theater to the world. Be sure to subscribe through the Mutual Audio Network podcast feed, any of our podcast days, or the Mutual YouTube channel, which includes MadCon and many other extra features and shows. See you all next time at Mutual Presents. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Sunday Showcase on the Mutual Audio Network. We invite you to continue the amazing audio tomorrow on Mutual with the Monday Matinee. Our weekly series of dramatic, theatrical, classic, eclectic, and live radio dramas. You can subscribe to the full Mutual Audio Network feed every day for the world's largest curated collection of audio drama, or find the Monday Matinee feed in your favorite podcast players. See you tomorrow at the matinee, and thanks so much for listening.
Showcase Sundays today on the Mutual Audio Network.